Up to Mizmor Gimel. Mizmor David, Bevarchai Mipnei Avshalom Binoi. Mizmor David, the question over here is, why is this a Mizmor? David HaMelech is running for his life. He is running from who? From his own son. So this we'll discuss a little bit in a few moments, but one of the issues is, why does it say the word Mizmor? It's not something to sing about when your own child is trying to kill you. So we all know that Avshalom rebelled against his father. Avshalom wanted to take over the Malchus, and Avshalom had the support of Achitofel and of Doeg. And we'll see Rashi, we'll see in the Farshim, he had many, many people that supported him. Avshalom, Chazal say, was a child of a Ben Soirer Umayre. Someone is, how could it happen? How could it possibly happen that a person could have a child that would want to kill him? So Chazal said that then David, he fought many, many battles. In fact, Chazal said David had 400 children that were children from Noshim. Eishes Yifas Toya. Eishes Yifas. So a person goes out to battle, and you see a beautiful woman. So Parashas Kisetze gives us the entire procedure of what to do, to take her, to shave off her hair, to force her to have her nails grow long, and she lies by the door, and she is in a and she should look disgusting in the person's eyes. The Torah tries very hard to persuade the person that it's not a good idea to marry this woman. If yet the person still wants to marry her, he can marry her. But the Torah goes on to say the next parsha of Kiel Ish Bein Soirer Umoireh. Einenu Shemei B'Kol Aviv V'Kol Imoy. There can be no greater than Soirer Umoireh than a child who rises up and attempts to murder his own father. So it's a question, how could it possibly happen that David could have such a child who would want to actually kill him? But that's the reality. And Chazal also elaborated a little bit that this was also part of the after effect of the Maisa with David and Bathsheba. With Bathsheba, that story haunts David for the rest of his life. That David, he took this woman, Bathsheba, who was married to Uriah HaChiti. She wasn't really married to him, she was divorced from him, but there was a question of ethics. Everyone that went out to battle, before he went to battle, he gave his wife a divorce, just in case he would not be found, something would go wrong in battle, and the wife should not be an aguna. So they would give their wives a divorce. Was the divorce conditional? Was the divorce absolute, right there on the spot? This is a machloikis, Rashi and Tosfos. But a divorce was given, so technically there was nothing wrong with David taking this woman as a wife. But what haunted David his whole life was the way it was done. That there was still an expectation that Uriah would come back from battle and would take back his wife. So it's like Ani Hamahapich Bacharoda, a poor man that sees a loaf of bread in the street and is making his way to pick up the loaf of bread. And a rich man happens to be right there. Oh, look at that. And he takes the loaf of bread. The rich man has done absolutely nothing wrong according to the letter of the law. But obviously, we all understand this. It's not ethical. A poor man has his eyes set on that loaf of bread. He's hungry. He's desperate. The other fellow is not desperate. For him, it's just a windfall. It's just a bonus. So technically, you can do it. Business, you can do a lot of things in business. Is it ethical? So that's always the big dilemma. So here, there's a woman, she is married to another man, Uriah HaChiti. She was divorced due to circumstance, because of the war. David sees her, David takes her, David then finds out that she's pregnant. David then realizes there's going to be a big problem over here, and he basically sends Uriah HaChiti to the front lines to die. That's exactly what they tried to do to David when he was young.
This is Avshalom as the son?
Yeah, no, not from this woman. No, not from this woman. So because of this mice, Nosson HaNavi came to David and rebuked him, severely rebuked him. We have to be extremely careful here, because Chazal say, Kol Oimer David Chata, Einoi Ela Toyeh. Anyone that says that David did an Avera is making a grave mistake. And really, how do we understand this? So this is the ancient old dilemma, which you're not going to get a good answer anywhere. Ancient old dilemma, what exactly was going on in the Maisa of Bathsheba. One thing is for sure, this Maisa haunted David for the rest of his life. And part of that was the prophecy that I'm going to, as a punishment, the Navi says, Hinni make him, I'm going to cause to rise up a person from your home that's going to try to kill you. And this was part of the punishment. We're going to read the Medrash in a few moments. And David was worried his entire life. He knew that there would be repercussions. There would be punishment for his avera. For you can't even not call it an avera, Chazal said, but for this event. And he was afraid that the person that would rise up to kill him would be a slave, like Hordas. He was a slave, Achashverosh. He was just a stable boy. There are people, there have been throughout history, there are people who have seized power from mighty kings and emperors who are nothing other than nobodies, literally nobodies. And they came, they rose up and they conquered. So David was afraid that the same thing would happen. The prophecy was there would be a person who would rise up from his home. It could be the butler. It could be the waiter. It could be my press secretary.
We've seen that military coups aren't always from generals.
Absolutely. Like anyone. Achashverosh was a stable boy.
Not the highest level officer, corporal.
Oh, you never know. Yosef, because the Mishnah, who's Yosef? What was Yosef? Yosef was just, I'm sure the whole Egypt was in shock. Who is an Ivri? An Ish Ivri, he was the lowest level of a social ladder in Egypt. And an Ivri has become the Mishnah Lamelech. So David was frightened because if anyone that would rise up against him, he would assume would have no rachmanis and would murder him. And this is the Mizmar. The Mizmar is that it was decreed by the Navi in the name of Hashem that there would be punishment for this unethical conduct of David and Bathsheba. And the punishment, the words of the Navi was, there will be a person that will rise up from within your own home who will seek to overthrow you and give you grief. And David was convinced that it's going to be a slave, it's going to be someone from within his cabinet, someone that was very close to him, that is jealous and has some grievance.
We have that too.
That also happened. But here, David, when he saw the events unfold and saw that the person that was rising up against him to fulfill this prophecy was his own son. A son, at the end of the day, will have rachamim, rachmanus on his son. That's the way Hashem created the world. A child, deep down inside, you have to know how to talk to him, deep down inside has rachmanis for a father. And thus, David sang a song. Here I am. I did an avera. And the Navi told me I would be punished. The punishment could have come true in so many different ways. And here Hashem had rachmanis upon me, and allow the punishment to come forth with the ultimate rachmas, that the person that's rebelling against me, that is trying to cause me to lose my malchus, trying to take away my malchus, trying to kill me, is my own son. My own son. No, I'll sit down with him. I'll talk to him. We'll talk. I'll take him out to a baseball game, and he'll forgive me, and he'll have rachmanis upon me. So this is one of the main reasons why it says Mizmar LeDavid. Bevarchai mipnei af shalom. Why?
But the Gemara says on the pasuk in Sarcha Hashem shalom damim ro, it gives it the opposite interpretation.
That a son is even worse.
Why is he guilty? Because if the son is breaking in, the son will be guilty if he kills his father, because he knows his father would never kill him, but he would kill his father.
Okay, let's see. We'll see the Mamar Chazal.
Yeah, just making a point,
there are different dimensions. There are elements that may make it even worse. You're right, there are elements. Yeah. You know, like the more you love someone, the more you give to someone, the more they hate you. Everyone knows the story with the Chassam Sofer and the Sfasem, the different Gedolei Yisrael who were Rabbanim, and they did enormous chesed for people in their community, and there's always troublemakers, and there was a person that gave the Rav tsaros, they gave the Rav grief, and the Sfasem said, I don't understand why this Balabas, why he gives me so much grief. I never did him a taiva. Okay, it's so true. The more you give, the more the recipient resents. There's no person in your life that you give more to than your own children. So children can come to resent the fact that everything they have in this world came from their father. They didn't earn their own keep. It can bring great resentment. Rabbi Mayevsky is saying that having a child rebel against you in one dimension can be a lot worse. Mm-hmm. Because a child, because he's the recipient of everything, this potential for even greater resentment, and that could haunt you, where he'll come against the person, the father, with a vengeance like none other. So you're right. But on the other hand, a father-child relationship is one that it's built into your DNA that there is rachanim. So enechanami elu ve'elu divrei Elokim cham. Let's see over here. Mizmul David bevarchem b'bnei Avshalom b'nai.
Mitzudat Zion says milashon zemer. So I was thinking, what's
the zemer? What's the pruning?
There is also zmira. Zmira is cut. Shel anavim. So it fits more here. Because his son wants to kill.
Cut him off.
No, it's Milishon Zemer.
Don't make a mistake. I think he's trying to cut him down.
Even though
Zemer can go both ways. It's a play on the word. Someone's trying to cut him down, but David turned, he transformed this that he was trying to be cut down into a song. Okay, let's see. There's a lot of it going on. Let's see Rashi. Rashi Mizmor David Bevarchu Bnei Avshalom Benoi. Rashi Pasuk Aleph Harbe Droshoi Starshu Bnei Agada Badavid. There are many Droshos. Rabbi Seinu Amru. But so right away Rashi could say Hakdama. There's a lot of stuff here. Go look in the art scroll. You'll see a long pages of commentary. Mm-hmm. However, but Rabbi Seinu Amru B'Talmud Misha Amar Loi Hanavi. When the Navi said to him, Hinani Mekim Olecha Ro'ah Mitoich Beisecha. This is what we just explained. I'm going to cause to bring about that they will rise up against you evil from within your own home. Haya Levi Soyer. The heart of David was stormy. Soer was a good word of it. Soer means a storm. He was frightened to a degree. Shema Eved a Mamzer Yakum Olai, maybe a slave or a Mamzer will rise up against me. She'ena Mirachim Olai will not have any rachmanis upon me. David knew exactly what a Mamzer means. Because his entire early life, he was accused of being a mamzer. It's an interesting thing. David was suspected, we said many, many times, David was suspected of being a mamzer. Because David had a certain understanding of what mamzer is persecuted. A mamzer is discriminated against. And that caused an enormous resentment. And that resentment can flare up. And the mamzer can do very, very cruel things as revenge. Kevan Shiyada Shabinoihu, that the prophecy of Hinni Mekim Olecha Rami Tuch Besech is his own child, Somach, he rejoiced. Umedush Agoda Al Shero'o Tachsisoi Kayemes. Another interpretation, the second interpretation, what is the Mizmor? The Mizmor is that when David fled, then you want to know who are your friends, who are your enemies. When you're down and out. Okay, when you're down now, when a person is in an exalted position of authority, and then suddenly the day comes when he's persecuted, and people are chasing after him, who remains by his side, and who abandons him? That's the litmus test. Who are your real friends? Your real friends are with you at times when you're down. When you're down and out. Like I know someone who was indicted, okay, and it was big news. And some people right away, they're very embarrassed. I'm embarrassed to be associated with this person. I'm embarrassed. You know, here everyone knows I'm this guy's friend. And here he is. He's being accused of a crime and he's likely going to go to jail. so I'm embarrassed. I want to distance myself from this person. And people find themselves in a dilemma. Here I am. If I'm his friend, that means I'm guilty by association. Just the fact that I'm his friend, he does such things and I don't know about it. On the other hand, there are people, so that's the real litmus test. Whoever goes and befriends him at this moment in time, at the time when he's in trouble, that's quite a statement. Listen, you made a mistake, you did something horrible, you're in a lot of trouble. No, I'm associated with you, so that's right, I'm also guilty. I'm associated with you, but I can't abandon you. I can't just let them throw you to the dogs. I have to also suffer the bizarreness with you. I didn't do the Avera, I wouldn't imagine such an Avera, and I'm shocked out of my mind that you could do something like this, but it's a very big nesayon. Okay, it's a very big nesayon when you have someone that you're very close to, and then with a very embarrassing revelation, where do you stand? Where do you stand with this person? Do you stand by him or do you abandon him? I'm sure there are books written about this by people who went through this and you really then learn who your real friends are. So David HaMelech was very happy because he had good friends. Even though most of Klal Yisrael, it says, wanted him out. The majority of Klal Yisrael wanted David should lose, he should die, he should be removed from the Malchus, and Avshalom should take over. Obviously, Avshalom was very charismatic. He was very charismatic. He carried the day. Everyone was on his side. But David was very happy that he still had a good chevra. Who was the chevra? It's called Tachsisoi Kayemis. His inner core. Rabbi Mechoi, have a good word for this word? Tachsiso? I don't have a good translation. Tachsiso. What?
Not offhand. I've heard it in other contexts.
It means his close inner core, inner group. His chevra. The people that they remain Kayemis.
Members of the round table.
Shahoyu avodav v'yakresi v'yaplesi, his servants, and the kresi v'yaplesi. The kresi v'yaplesi is a code word for the, really refers to the urim v'tumim. The urim itself is a very fascinating expression. Kresi v'yaplesi usually means it cuts off. When you hear what the urim v'tumim reveal, you have nothing to say. Your mouth is quiet. It's like you cut down. You have nothing more to say. A place like Lashon of a Pella. It's a wonder. Sheheim has Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin, they are called the Kresi Uplesi. When they speak, everyone is quiet. And their words are wondrous. The wisdom that comes forth from the Sanhedrin, they and David's servants, his close servants, Machazikim Adnuso, they still stayed with David. They respected him and they joined him. They went imoy anoichi b'tzara. Adnusayalim, they maintained David as their master. Even though the majority of Klal Yisrael looked at David as a fugitive, they looked at him as a nobody, that he's out, he's on the run. The Sanhedrin and David's servants, they all remained loyal to David. They maintain that David is the master. And Kesha Amar Lochem, where do you see this? Kesha Amar Lochem, Kumu V'Nivracha, V'Nei Avshalom, when it says there in the Pasuk, in the Pesukim there, that they said to David, rise up and run away, they're going to kill you if you stay here. And David fled, David left the palace. He left Ir David. Max Sham, Kol Asher Yivchar Adoni HaMelech Hinei Avodecha. Okay, I don't know the exact, it's been a long time since I went and learned this. But the basic content over there is that they approached him, his servants, and they said to him, we're on your side. Don't worry, we're going to support you. Wherever you go, we're going to go. Anything that you choose, you need, take, we are with you. And when he came to, on his journey, when he fled, it says, these are the names of people. V'shoivi ben Nochosh. Quiet, there's some very exotic names. Even today they don't have such exotic names. V'shoivi, you don't know what the name of Nachash? Mark and Eric Tishroi, you ever meet someone? My name is Nachash.
Kolev.
Yeah, Kolev. Kolev, you have Kolev. That's a good name. What's the Kolev? It's a Kelev. Kelev, right? Kolev.
It's a last name.
Kolev ben Yifune. Nachash, a snake.
Maybe it's Nachash, maybe it's Nikash.
It says in, I have dots in my mind.
Who put in the dots?
Who put in the dots? It's a pasuk. This is a pasuk. There's no argument about the dots. This is the Messiah. Rashi is quoting a pasuk. Rashi is quoting a pasuk. V'shoyve nochash u'machir ben amiel u'bar zilai hagilabi yatsu likrasoy v'chilklu sham, and they supported him. They supported him. They gave him food. David had a very chashuva collection of people that support him. And that's amazing. That really is amazing. It's, that speaks volumes about David. That David's inner core, they really knew who he was. David made such an impression upon the people. You know, you hear all these stories of the politicians, and then either when they leave office, they say, like, you know, it's coming about, well, how, I don't talk about these people over here. Cuomo, such nasty, nasty Lashon Hara of the way he handled himself with his inner core of people. He told them, I'll throw you out of the window. Every meeting was combative, nasty. You hear all these, one after another, you hear about these politicians. Are you good to your own people? You always hear that about good people. About good people, they say to his chever, to his inner core, you're so good to us. The inner circle, you're good to, it speaks volumes. So the world doesn't like you. No one likes everyone. But so everyone.
Who you choose to be among.
Right, who is your staff? Circle. Who do you select to be part of your cabinet, part of your inner core? But even though David here was on the run, and the Chazal make it very clear, we'll see the Midrash, that the majority of Klal Yisrael did not like him. The majority of Klal Yisrael did not accept him. They chose Avshalom in his place. Yet his inner core, the important people, they were loyal to David. And for that, David sang a song, Mizmar LeDavid. So we have Rashi gives us two out of the ballpark home runs as to explain life. And when things are rough in life, this everything of course is a mushel for every person has there. Every person has, no person in this world doesn't have a peckle, has issues. And David in the most difficult situation where his own child is attempting to murder him, to kill him, yet he was still able to find good. And what was the good? He thanked Hashem that was afterwards. But even when he's running.
That's what the advantage is, that he survived.
So you're saying that the word mizmor is going achar
hamayis.
So when you come to even the Radak and the Ibn Ezra says that's another idea. But Rashi doesn't go there. Rashi says bevorchai. Rashi says even while he was running away, even as he was running away, he was able to go see that there was a silver lining. And the silver lining over here is one of two things, that it was a prophecy, that he's going to suffer. And look, Hashem Rahman is Hashem made it come out, and the prophecy was fulfilled in the most, was fulfilled in a pleasant way. I mean, I'm not pleasant, obviously, but relatively speaking, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, got off easy.
It could have been a lot, lot worse. And number two, this idea that even though I'm on the run, look who's helping me. Look who are my friends. Friends are everything. Who you are part of a chevra is priceless. Part of a kehila today, you know, today shuls are really clubs. It's really just a men's club. Go to it. Really, that's really, I mean, people, they complain, stop the talking during davening. It sounds like, you know, every time I hear that, it sounds like the train. Stand clear of the closing doors. Stop the talking during davening. They should have the same voiceover. The voiceover when you come to shul. So, you know what the pushback is? First of all, okay, this is one of my pet peeves. I actually had such a heated discussion with one of the people who actually, I think, sponsors part of the advertisements. I told him my whole piece. He couldn't believe how nasty I was. But part of the pushback that Rabbanim say is, so let's say they talk during davening. Terrible avera. It's a terrible avera. There's no question about it. But the attitude, it has to be with the musa, the rebuke, has to be with the understanding that a shul today in the 21st century is very different than a shul in the time of the Gemara. Now, yes, how can that stop your courses? Yes, it is. A shul is a shul. A shul is a base of makom tefillah, makom kodesh baruch hu. But there's definitely another element that has entered into abote kinyus, yes, abote midrashos, that doesn't appear to be in the Gemara, that a shul has become today a men's club. It's a club. It's a social gathering, which in Golos is extremely valuable. It's priceless. So doesn't take away from the fact that you're doing an avera, talking during davening, this is avera. That's right. It's the worst avera, and you can go all the marachas. But the mussar of how to address the problem cannot be addressed the way it's addressed in the Gemara. In the Gemara, they address the problem. If you talk during davening, you're going straight to Gehenna. No, don't pass go. Okay, that's right. So today, the mussar has to be given that you're talking during davening. But the mussar has to be tempered with the realization that a shul today, even the biggest shuls, are shtibuch. They're just big, nice rooms which are built al tanai, that they should not have kedusha, because a shul today in Golos is our only ish es re'ehu yoymar chazak. And who says this? I'm not saying this. David is saying this. David went into Golos. When he was in the palace, no, I'm the king. Bow down. Bow down or I kill you all. Korea or Mishtachare. Bow down. Now David goes to Golos. I'm in Golos now. Who do I got? Who's going to help me in Golos? Even though the whole world is against me, I have a chevra. Who's my chevra? Good people. The Sanhedrin, my servants, Mizmor L'David, Baruch Hashem, Baruch. He didn't go tell the Sanhedrin, stop the talking during davening. This is my chevra. Don't talk during davening. You'll go to Gehenna. That's right. You will. But the way you say it is a little bit. The way you say it is a little bit different because this is my chevra. My chevra, Mizmor L'David. It's Rashi. It's an awesome Rashi. David here is going into Golos, and also going. Like I said, going back to Sukkah. The mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah, this is something that we say in the Yehir Ratzayin. You say this in the Ushpizin. And one of the reasons why Hashem gave us the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah is just in case on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippurim, there was a gezerah, a gezardin, that a person should be exiled, a person should go into galus, should suffer. Going into the sukkah should be the fulfillment of the gezerah. There's such a principle, and comes from David. This mamash comes from David. There is such a principle that in case chas v'shalom there is a gezerah, so the gezerah doesn't have to be fulfilled. There's a lot of room in the gezerah how it has to become to fruition. How it has to be fulfilled. It can be fulfilled in a pleasant way or in a harsh way. Just in case there was a gezerah issued on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, that we have to suffer by going into Golis, our entrance into the sukkah should be the fulfillment of this gezerah, and we're all done. Nothing more needs to happen. And this is true in so many different dimensions. You see people, you see the minig, we don't do this, the people that get malchus on Erev, on Erev Yom Kippur. They lie down on the floor, and someone takes a gartel and whips them 39 times. And you say, Lurachum, what, just in case it was nigzar upon me this year, I should be smitten. I should get malchus. This should be it. There is such a principle of just because Hashem has issued a gezerah, the gezerah can come forth in a pleasant way. Everyone knows the example of the Basar. It says in Techach, by Meskel, the Pasuk says that you eat the flesh of your own children. What is the Pasuk? V'achaltem b'sar b'neichem u'b'sar b'noisechem tocheilu. Could there be a bigger klala in the Techach than these words? You will eat the flesh, the meat of your own children. And Chazal, in fact, say that such a thing is l'mala m'derech hatema. You study world history, people that were in situations of starvation. You don't find them eating their own children. You don't find this. Even in the greatest state of hunger, which Rahman al-Hassan, we should never know from what they say, the intensity of what it's like, we don't find people stooping to such a low to actually eat their own children. How then could it possibly be that they did this? They ate their own children. The curse was l'mala miderech hateva. And yet Chazal say, HaKadosh Baruch is mahapech kolol lebracha. And what's the example? It's a classic example. In the early 20th century, when America, there was literally nothing. You start off probably the very beginning, maybe even towards the end of the 19th century. In America, there was no chinuch, there was nothing, and there were people that were coming, fleeing, fleeing Europe from due to extreme poverty, they came to America. And Rahman al-Islam, the vast majority of people who came to America were not prepared, and many of their children, unfortunately, no fault to them, went off the derech and were not religious, and many of them even married non-Jews. For a person to have children that remain from, that were Jewish, is like a bracha ad b'lidai. So a person says, I'm going to America, I'm going out of town to somewhere, and I'm going to be there for Shabbos, for Yom Tov, and Baruch Hashem, ubesar b'neichem, v'achaltem besar b'neichem, ubesar b'noisechem tochelu. They're observant. They keep Shabbos. They keep kosher. I will be able to sit at their table and eat the meat that they serve me. The basar of my son, that he will serve me on my Shabbos table, and the basar of my daughter and son-in-law, that I will eat my Shabbos lunch meal, I'm going to eat. V'achaltem besar b'neichem, u'besar b'noiseichem toichelu. Your children will be yireim u'shleimim. So here you have a pasuk that is the greatest klala that can possibly be, and this klala can be nishapech lebracha, interpreted into all different way. So it's the same thing to a certain degree. There was a gzeira on David HaMelech that there's going to be a person that's going to rise up from his own home, is going to try to kill him, and here's it was interpreted in a nothing is pleasant, obviously, but in the in relatively speaking, it could have been a lot worse. Next, Hashem.
By the way, that's the one of the psukim that's used the Satmar Rebbe's introduction to Pirkei Avos. That pasuk, because he says, if you want to be firm at the end of your life, your children are taking you the last mile. If you're very firm, you better make sure your kids are up to your standards, because you're going to end up eating in their house.
Ooh.
And if they're not firm, because you said, I can't listen, I can't work hard on them, and they lead their own life. What are you going to do later? Because they're going to feed you.
It's like the famous bumper sticker. Bumper sticker. Be good to your children. They will choose your nursing home.
Yeah. Well, that's like Rabbi Wine said. You know, I told you, I used it so many times, but it's a very good part. When some of his mispalim gave him grief, he said, remember, at Yilavaya, I'm making the speech.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay, next pasuk. Pasuk is more Rabu Tsoroi. David says to Hashem, I have so many enemies. This the most of Klal Yisrael was against him. His approval rating was in the low 30s. And that's with the boost of the mainstream media. And it was true. It was more Rabu Tsoroi. I have so many enemies. Rabim Kamim Oloi. So many people have risen up against me. I saw one of the first movies of the word Rabim. More Rabu means in quantity, and Rabim means great people. That my enemies are not—they're not lightweights. Even though we learned in the previous Rashi that David HaMelech did have this Sanhedrin on his side, and he did have some major heavyweights in his chevra, but there were many Gidoyle Yisrael, Rabim, very great Doig Hadoimi. Was David's arch enemy, but David was a tremendous Talmud Chacham. Okay, and another whole collection. I don't remember all the names, all the cast of characters, which we'll come to over time. But Rabim over here means great people, very great, distinguished people of power, of note, of dignity. They also were against me. So it's not just more Rabu, the numbers. The Hamoinam is very easy to sway. The average person knows from nothing. The average person is not interested. They just want leave me alone, and you just tell them a little lashon hara. That's enough. You see what goes on in the world of politics. The average person doesn't even know who the vice president is. Doesn't even know who the president. Doesn't know who their senators are. They don't know from nothing. You just need to tell them, show them a commercial. A little so comes time.
Even
come,
the president doesn't know who the vice president
is. Comes time, the elections. You put up an advertisement on television, on the radio. A couple of nasty words. It's already enough for most people.
Interview, and you say that people don't know anything.
They don't understand. It's hilarious. So it's very easy to sway the Hamoina. So more Rabu Tzora, they have a very good smear campaign. They're very well funded. Mainstream media is on their side.
Yep.
And they did a job on Midav, it says. But you know, what about the intellectuals? What about the people who really know what's going on? What about the real people? Are they also against me? So David shockingly says, Rabin. There are some very, Rabin here means great people, people of note, people of stature. They've also been swayed. They've also been manipulated. And they're also against me. And this is a very challenging type of thing in life where you have, when you don't just have, you know, people, the comfort a person normally has, listen, even though the Hamoinam, they're against me, those who know. Yeah, in this case, those who know, don't know. That's the tzara. Pasagim, Rabim, Oimim, Linafshi. There are many that say, many people say, Linafshi, concerning. There are many who say, concerning my neshama. David now is describing a religious approach to his problems. Ein Yeshuasa Loi, there is no salvation to him. Velokim in Hashem, Selah. So this ends the first third of this mizmar. This mizmar, we'll see in a moment, is divided into three parts. And each part concludes with the word Selah. What does Selah mean? So we're going to discuss this in a moment. Selah, there are so many perishmas as well. I'm going to read it inside the Mefarshim. Let's wait a little bit until we get to the end of the mizmar. Then we'll go back and discuss some points. But Selah means either forever, or Selah means... What?
Is there a reason why you put Capital Gimel now?
Yes. Yes, we're going to see that in the Medrash. Yes, we're going to discuss many of these things. Yes, we're going to see it's every mizmar. There are many things we have to discuss. Number one is who wrote it. When was it written in response or with regard to what event, and why is it positioned here specifically next to the previous mizmar? These are all every issue is an issue. But this is the first third. Now he says over there in Papasa Gimel, rather many people say concerning my neshama, Ein Yeshuasa Loi Velokim, that you have to read it backwards, that Hashem has no desire to bring my neshama salvation. My neshama now is down and out. And the only way I can pull out of this is through Hashem's help. Hashem, if I'll be derech hateva, I'm done. My career is over. And the only way is for Elohim, Hashem, to come to pull me out of the pit. And Hashem would never do that, because Hashem is in agreement with the Rabim and with the Hamoinam that I am undeserving, I am guilty, I have to be eliminated. This is what many people say, and they say, Selah, this is the way it's going to be for my neshama forever. Or Selah means, this is true, emes. It's another way of saying emes. The other
statement to what we just said, if the Sanhedrin went along with him,
the Sanhedrin was outnumbered. It's true, the Sanhedrin went along with him. They had no power. They were stripped from their power. If the majority of Klal Yisrael, the Sanhedrin was also on the run. They were also fugitives with David. David was just saying, "I have a good chevra. I have chizuk. The people in my inner circle were all in it together." When you're all alone, it's that much harder. If you have a group of people, good, solid people, that are with you, it makes it worth everything. Okay, you know, if you have an inner core of good people, everything is good. So even though he did have a good group of people, but they were not the majority, they were the minority. There were many, many more people that were against David. Let's see Rashi Pasuk Beis, Rabim Kamalai, Bnei Adam Gidoylim Batoira, Gidoylim B'Chochma, Gidoylim B'Oisha, Gidoylim B'Koyma. It's incredible what Rashi Eliyah says. Many people that were great in Torah, great in wisdom, great in wealth, Gidoylim. How come Rashi didn't put that first? Today you would put that first, right? Everything is about money. Gidoylim, the koima, stature. Okay, there can be people that are not chachkami, they're not wise, they're not wealthy. Somehow, they just, people listen to them. They're people of note.
There's something strange about this. I'm looking at the Medrash here, and Rashi's taking from the Medrash, but changed it a bit. It says Rabim Bikomo, Rabim Batorah, right?
The order.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Rashi changed the order. I have no idea why. Who are the people?
He doesn't say the others.
Okay, so who are these who are going Shaul? Shaul tried to kill him. The Lidei Harafa, the children of Rafa, I think means the giants.
Okay.
Right, the giants. Arpa's children were the giants.
Goliath
and his brothers. They were giants. Arpa had children who were giants. Mm-hmm. So these were the giants, including Goliath. Goliath and his brothers and all of the whole family. The whole family from the Pelishtim. They were all part of the Pelishtim clan who wanted to kill David. Doeg who had Doimi. Doeg was a very big Talmud Chacham. And the Achi Toifel, he was Chachma. So I think what over here he means as follows. Koima, I thought Gedolim B'Koima means in stature.
Oh, yeah.
But it could very well be he means it literally. In height, Goliath, giants.
No, because the first person to mention is Shaul, who's supposedly very
right.
Tall.
Mishichma Ulamala. Mishichma Ulamala, he was God only called up. So does that mean literally he was very, very tall? Possibly.
Yeah.
But it means more than stature. He was an exalted person. Okay, but certainly Doeg was Gadol Torah. We know that Doeg was an incredible Talmud Chacham. Doeg's jealousy of David was for one reason.
You know that Doeg begimatria David?
Oh yeah, I know that. Doeg,
same number.
Same, very good. Doeg was jealous of David because David, when they learned Bechavrusa, they were both awesome Talmidei Chachamim, but only David was able la suke shmeitza aliba de hilchasar. He was able to come to a halachic conclusion. And Doeg was not. Why? What's the difference? Doeg was just as big a Talmud Chacham as David. So the answer is a very powerful insight. Is there's more than just the Chochma Satorah. There is Siyata D'Shmaya. Siyata D'Shmaya only comes to Yira Shemayim. Doeg was lacking in Yira Shemayim, which prevented him from this principle called Asuke Shmaitza Aliba de Hilchasa, to conclude the learning with a psak halacha, a clear psak halacha. And this is where Doeg was jealous of David, and that caused him to want to kill him. The jealousy went to such an extreme that he always was joining on the other side, always joining to go in and bring harm to David. Shaul is paranoid. Who is Shaul in this one? Shaul, you want to say, is Koyim, Shaul is everything. I mean, we want to say, okay, Achitofel was Chochma. There's no question about that. Achitofel was the Yoetz. Achitofel was David's advisor. Everyone flocked to Achitofel.
He was the
Avezdin, but he was also known as the Yoetz. Everyone came to him for advice.
Doeg.
No, not Doeg.
Doeg was
the Avezdin. Doeg was
the
Achitofel.
Doeg was the Avezdin, it says, and Achitofel was the Yoetz.
Okay, so Doeg was the Avezdin. Doeg was the biggest Talmud Chacham in town. He was the biggest Talmud Chacham, he was Gadol B'Torah. Achitofel was the Yoetz. People came to him for advice. If you have a question, what to do in life, anything you had, he was the Yoetz. He was Gadol B'Chochma. Who was Gadol in Oysher? You want to say Shaul? I don't know who he's giving you examples here. I don't know. Who is Gadol in Koyma? Who is Gadol in Koyma? That's the Yelidei Harafa. The Yelidei Harafa certainly is Gadol in Koyma. They were very, very tall. Okay, I'm not sure. But these are double of things. Rabim. The greatest people of the world were against me. Ain, and what would they say? They would say, Imrim Lenafshi, Al Nafshi. Lenafshi, they wouldn't speak to my neshama, they would speak concerning my neshama. They would say, Ein Yeshu Asa Loi Ve'elokim Sela Lefi Sheba Al Eshes Ishna. Why is Rashi over here saying this? Rashi over here is saying something very important, because there are many different complaints they had against David. Number one, there are three main complaints against David. Number one, he's a Moabi. He's a descendant of the nation of Ammon. Not everyone accepted the Pesach HaLacha Ammoni V'loi Amoini v'loy amoinis v'loy v'loy amoinis. That was not, no, this was not even the time of Boaz. It went all the way down to Rus HaMoavi.
Yeah, but it's passed out because Abshalom was his son. So
this was not even a Shloima HaMelech. When they brought the Aron into the, this was finally settled. It was finally settled when they brought the Aron into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it was a miracle. The doors did not want to open, and it was only when they said Bavur David Avdecha did the doors of the Kodesh HaKadoshim open and allow the Aron to enter. And then David's enemies turned black like the bottom of a pot, acknowledging that they'd been wrong all along. It was not fully accepted, the Psak Halacha, Moyavi V'loy Moyavi. So there was a group of people in Klal Yisrael that challenged David in that he was not, his Yichus was illegitimate. Number two, there was a group of people that probably still believed that he was a Mamzer with his Maisa, with his father, Yishai, and his brothers, and the Shifcha. That was another challenge. The Rashi is saying, put those two challenges aside. There is this event that haunts David his whole life, and especially when it comes to Avshalom, and that is the Maisa of David Ubas Sheva. Lefi Sheba al Eshes Ish. He took Basheva as a wife. He had with her a child. He then called her husband, her previous husband, Uriah Hachiti, back from battle, and in the process Uriah Hachiti was disrespectful to David. He was married by Malchus, which gave David permission to send him to the front lines and indirectly caused him to die. And when this was revealed, the entire story was revealed, people, they challenged that David, when he had relations with Bathsheba, she was still married, she was an Eshes Ish. Here she was an Eshes Ish. So this is what they said about David. Ein Yeshua Saloi Ve'elokim Sela. Hashem will never save his soul. And why is Rashi saying this in reference to? Because when it comes to the other two things, it's not his fault. If David indeed was a descendant of Moab, so that's not his fault. If David was a Mamzer.
But that's never. Mamzer is never the kid's fault.
Of course, as I just said, it's not his fault.
A mamzer is a mamzer,
but it's not the mamzer's fault. It's not his fault. It's not the child's fault. If David was a descendant, if the Psak Halach would not have been accepted, David's a good person. So I'm not part of the Klal Yisrael. The Torah says, Loyavi, Moyavi, Bekahal Hashem. Okay, but I'm a good person. It's not my fault. You can't say that my neshama has no salvation in Hashem. It's not my doing. If David would be considered a mamzer, it's not my doing. I'm a good person. Hashem will be with me no matter what. It's a very powerful Musa, Rashi is saying. Hashem is with a person no matter what. It's not your fault. Anything that is not your doing, that's not your problem. Hashem is with you. But if David had a nisoyon with regard to an Eshes Ish, that's your doing, David. You made a decision. You knew she is an Eshes Ish, and now you made a decision to live with her. Oh, now you're subject to Ein Yeshuasa Loi Ve'elokim Sela. Rashi is extremely precise. The complaint of these words that they say regarding his neshama, Ein Yeshuasa Loi Ve'elokim Sela, is a very powerful statement. I'm not sure what I'm saying now.
There's something here. The expressions of Marabu reminds me, Marabu Masecha Hashem. As if this is Hashem's doing, this whole punishment.
Yes, well,
Marabu.
Yeah.
It's missing here. Marabu Masech Hashem. As I said, Marabu Tzarai. It's also.
He's using the same expression. He's using the same of Marabu in both examples, when he praises Hashem and when he has difficulties. Yes. Because like David, even a difficulty is still an act of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a very nice idea. Now, I don't know if this is true, but the word neshama, is the word neshama l'shem zohar or l'shem nekeva? So if I'm not mistaken, it's both. It's both. Okay, it's used both ways. You say, the word neshama, look at Matzevas. You see, sometimes they use it Lashon Zohar, sometimes Lashon Nekeva. I think there's a very big expert in Diktok, Rabbi Lenschitz, should be good. Well, so I think in his Sefer he shows that the word Neshama is used in Tanakh both ways.
Both ways. They have a whole list of words like that.
Many words are like that. So this word over here as well, it says the word Loi. Is the word Loi, what is the subject of the word Loi? Is it David? Or l'chayra, I don't know, l'chayra, it's going on the word nafshi. Oimrim l'nafshi. My enemies say, concerning my neshama, ein yeshuasa loy. It doesn't say law. Ein yeshuasa loy. So it seems, if I'm not mistaken,
David.
So if you want to take the opinion that neshama is lashon nekeva. So then, loy, what is lo? Lo is lashon zocha. So what does lo refer to? David himself, the person. David is a male. But I don't know, for me, for some reason, it just seems, it seems to flow better that if loy is referring back to the neshama. Oimrim lenafshi, my enemies say, they state concerning my neshama, ein yeshuasa. Yeshuasa here is feminine. Ein yeshuasa loy. There is no salvation to it. There is no salvation to it. Why did it say the word loy? Shouldn't it say the word ein yeshuasa lo? So you have to say referring to David. But if you want to say that the word neshama in this context is lashon zohar, then it's not. Then you can say that it's referring back to the neshama as well. I'm not sure I know what I'm saying. But by the way, when we spend time learning about the neshama, we want to find out how to the neshama. There's a lot of fascinating stuff. One thing, a lot of the farshim say very, very clearly, and this is no secret. There's no kabbalah, and that, I mean, really, is that the neshama has different parts, has many parts. If you go to a konshul, they light every mincha, every tefillah, 5 candles. And they have on each of the candles one of the names of the neshama. Yeah, yeah. Nefesh, neshama, yechida, I forgot, five. Yeah. But but even though they have there this Kabbalistic thing, they have 5 candles for the 5 different parts of the neshama, there's a much more basic principle that there are 2 parts to the neshama. There's a part of the neshama that rests in the moyach, in the brain, and there is a chelik of the neshama that rests in the heart. We think that the neshama has to be in one place. There's one neshama. That's not necessarily true. All the mufashim say this. The neshama is a very complex creature which communicates. They have very good Wi-Fi, the neshamas. All the parts of the neshama, all the different parts of the neshama communicate as one neshama. And the neshama, even scientifically, where does the neshama rest? Where does the neshama rest in the body? In the brain? In the heart? What is, how is the whole body? And this is no yahlach al-maisa, brain death. Achman was something about stem cell brain death, where only the brain, there is absolutely no activity in the brain, but the heart, for some reason, is still going. Why is the heart still going? What's going on? How does this, so whatever it is, so pull the plug. So some say yes, some say not. This is a question that will never be resolved. And some argue is that you don't know where the neshama is. The neshama has multiple components. There's a component in the neshama that's resting in the brain. There's a component that rests in the heart. When a person leaves this world, part of his neshama goes to Shemayim, and part of his neshama lingers in this world by his kever, or comes to this world. These are Kabbalistic terms which I don't know what I'm talking about. And thus, I'm just trying to say is that this could explain why sometimes neshama is used, is referenced as Lashon Zohar, and sometimes Nikkei, and Neshama HaTahoira, Neshama HaTahor. Yeah, if you study Matzevas.
Which is which? You don't need it.
Yeah?
And Rashi mentions here, Eni Shurat HaLo, Neshama Him Omrim Et Zeh, Lefi Shebaal Eshet Ish, Neshama Lo Baal Eshet Ish, Aguf Baal Eshet Ish.
That is why there's no salvation.
So any Yeshuata, no, David. You don't have to go.
No. Okay, I hear what you say. I accept. There are, okay. If you want to, no, he's not. How could you say I'm calm? How could you say that?
I disagree with it.
You have to go wash out your mouth.
Any Yeshuata, low Melahim. What is it?
What?
David doesn't have a Yeshua, and the Shama doesn't have a.
Ein Yeshuasa. I don't know. All right, let's leave it. Let's not dwell upon this. Ein Yeshuasa loy ve'elokim. There is no salvation for David in Elohim. This is what they say concerning David's neshama. David has a neshama, and David's enemies say that David is done. He's finished. Why? If the classic complaint about David is that he's a Moavi, then you can't say this complaint makes no sense. It's not David's fault.
Right.
And the other complaint is the Mamzer, this doesn't make any sense. Rashi is telling us in powerful Musar, your destiny is dependent upon your behavior. You make decisions. The whole life is about making decisions. A person is presented with a nisayon. David failed in the nisayon. His failure has consequences. His neshama now, or he, as no, will no longer have salvation in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He will not enter into the mechitzos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Selah, forever. Or this is the truth. Emes. Anyone that tells you that that is the truth, you know it's not the truth. If someone has to tell you this is the truth, you right away suspicious this is not the truth. Now this ends the first section of this mizmor. Now let's go to the next section. The Atah Hashem, Mogein Badi. Hashem, you are my shield. This is the makar of the Mogein David. Okay, this is not a Tzioni Var, the Mamlois, he goes to town on this. Mamlois quotes, the Mogein David. What is the Mogein David? That's not for now. The Mogein David, he actually quotes the Urs Achan, the Mogein David, the real Mogein David is Lamatzech Beneginois, we'll come to that. I think that's the next thing, but that's the Menorah. The Menorah is L'chayra, the real Mogein David. Today, we associate the Mogein David with a star, with a shape, six sides. What are the six sides? The Ushrizim. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and Yosef. Those David. Are... No, David, that's David. David's David. Holding the Mogein.
Oh, okay.
David is the number seven. Okay. The Mogein David, this is a Kadmon, says. The Mamre always quotes this. He says, the Mogein David is Shankas. And you look at all the Sfarim, they don't want to go there. Oh, you're at Tzioini, they don't want to go there. I don't know why. But the Mogein David was something which for generations was sacred, and many of the Mepharshim they read it into. You see, Hashem has hardly shluchim lamokim. They read it into this. They hear the Mogein David. I never knew that the six. I thought the six sides. I never knew this until yesterday. I always thought the Mogein David means Hashem is here, Hashem is there. Up, down, right, left, and all around, the six dimensions.
Many theories.
Right? Okay, fine, that's perfectly fine. Hashem, we live in the Olam of Gashmi, and Hashem is everywhere. Lamala, Lamata, six, right, like the Lulu. That's all. So I never knew this. No, it's called the Artsas Chaim. It's a very old sefer, a Kadman. I'm not familiar with who this is. Go check it out, Google it. Artsas Chaim. He says the Mogein David is David was soimech on the six. What we call the six Ushpizim. David lived with the image of Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, and Aaron in front of him. What would Moshe do in this situation? What would Aaron do in this situation? What would Yosef do in this situation? He lived with these individuals. Most of us can't even handle one person in front of us. Let me give you a vart. Yeah, I'll give you a Chaim Berlin vart. Chaim Berlin, see, in a fantasy world, let's say we would go to Chaim Berlin dinner, and they'll let me speak. They'll let me speak, okay? Here, this is the chairman of the dinner, by the way. Okay, he's the chairman of the dinner over here. Menachem Sperling, he runs the dinner.
So the chairman of the board.
Let me tell you the drasha by the Chaim Berlin dinner.
No,
what's the drasha? I'm telling you a real part. This is parsha to bring out the point of the Mogein David. Okay. In this week's parsha, last week's parsha, Rashi twice talks about Yitzchak, and it says Elokei Yitzchak. In the beginning of the parsha, Rashi says, why does Hashem refer to Yitzchak Elokei? Rashi, he's alive. He's alive, and Hashem is not miyachet his name on living people. Rashi says it was ki'ilu he died. He was blind. He was kolu babayis, and the yetzahara departed. Three things. By the way, Rashi, and therefore it's ki'ilu meis. Interesting. Rashi says when you kolu babayis ki'ilu meis. I leaped off the page when I read that because we've been experiencing lockdown. Quarantine, lockdown, globally, here, there, every year in the news, this, all over. Rashi says, "Kolu babayis ki'ilu meis." Pretty scary. Such words of Rashi. It's as if you're dead.
COVID.
Saying it's like a COVID. He was kolu babayis. He was kol b'bayis kilumeis. The Yetzahara departed, so it's kilumeis, and he was blind kilumeis. Okay, now go to the end of the parasha. End of the parasha, what does it say? It says, when he swore with love, when he made a treaty, ufachad Yitzchak. Rashi gets the question, why did he say pachad Yitzchak? Pachad Yitzchak is the name of Rav Chutna Sefer, Chaim Boim. Pachad Yitzchak, name of Yeshiva. Why? Why did he say pachad Yitzchak and not L-O-K Yitzchak? So what does Rashi say? Because he was afraid. Even though Rashi Bavon, he could say Elokei Yitzchak.
He said it to him later on.
He could say Elokei because Kilu Beis. Even though it was Rashi's proper Ferish, even though it was Kilu Beis, as Rashi said in the beginning of the parasha, Kilu Beis, he still could not bring himself to say Elokei Yitzchak because of the pachat. But what do you mean he's dead? Kilu Beis. Parents says, that's right, stop your dad. But a child, here's my bar, a child has to see his father in front of him every single day of his life as if he's alive. And you hear about people that they live their life, they see in front of them the demus diyukma, that's the expression, the image of their parent, of their Rebbe, their somebody that they're very close to, long after they're gone, long after they die. They see them in front. The demus diyuknoi is lefanav. So Rashi over here said that even though Enochanami Yitzchak died, he's kilumeis, and Yaakov is entitled to swear Elokei Yitzchak because kilumeis. No, I have a pachad of my father. It's kiilu. He's alive. Kiilu. He's alive. That's tremendous guidance. When you can make a roshan on a person to such a degree that everything that you do in your life, you see him in front of you. He's dead. He's entitled to say Elokei Yitzchak. Pachad Yitzchak. It's ki'il, he's alive. So I would say that one of the things of Chaim Boim, which is tremendous, Musa has tremendous, probably the greatest mila of all the years I was there in Chaim Boim, is the Rebbeim. The old timers, now it's not true anymore because the new generation, is they mamish live with Rav Chutna in front of them. It's like really scary. It's like scary. Rav Shiva Shlita and all the other people in that league, in that age group, they mamish, the demus diyuknoi is mamish alive. That's a tremendous musa haskel to that hashkofa. You have a parent, you have a rebbe, there's a messiah in Klal Yisrael. You have to see the people that raised you. Ki ilu chai, their mom is right in front of you. David, this is what it says in the Mamlois and in the Mishem, the Oitzra Ischai. David, he had a shield. Yatra Hashem Mogin Ba'adi, Mogin Ba'adi, he writes, it says it again in the same paragraph, I think the second time does it say, the word Mogin a little bit later on, let me see, no, not this is Mark, he says it on this passage. You are my shield. And he talks about the Mogin David. And what was the Mogin David? David had in front of him the image of six people who guided his every move in life. Avraham, Yitzhak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, and Yosef. And when you live your life and you come into these, it's not for nothing that these are the Yushpizim. It's not for nothing. These are the Yushpizim. And when you live your life, and you have a dilemma, and you can draw from these six people, wait a minute, I have a dilemma. Who had the same dilemma in their life? Yitzchak. What would Yitzchak have done? Open up the Chumash. Read what it says in the parasha. Read what it says in Rashi. Oh, that's what I'm going to do. Next day, another dilemma. Who had this dilemma? I can't find Avraham, Yitzchak. Aaron had this dilemma. I know this medrash. Aaron, what does it say? What Aaron do? Oh, that's what I'm going to do. David, and when you live like that, you're protected. You're my shield. Incredible part. I was taught the mugging David. I grew up as a Zionist. What can I tell you? Mugging David is a sacred symbol. So what's the mugging David? Six dimensions. Hashem is here, Hashem is there. Liebe Schnalzer, he's a Zionist. his song of a Mizrach, Ma'ariv, Lamala, Lamata. You know that song? He has a very famous song, right? So that's the Magen David song. That's the most popular song in Eretz Yisrael. That song, Mizrach, Ma'ariv, Lamala, Lamata. That song, because that's the Israeli flag, the Magen David. Hashem is in all six dimensions. Okay, it's very funny that a chassid is singing a song in Eretz Yisrael that's mamish megala, the soid of the Israeli flag. Hashem has a sense of humor, right? So that's how we've been brought up. Everyone knows that. That's how we've been brought up. The Magen David is six. This is new to me, this idea. The Magen David, this symbol, is six people. There are six people. David, he lived his life with these people in front of him. And that is a Musa Haskell for us, that when we live our lives and we have dilemmas, we have to see the Demus, the Yuknoi of these six people in front of us as well, to guide us in this dimension. A whole new Mahalach in the Magen David, yeah.
The Pachad Yitzchak you mentioned, tomorrow is the yard sale of the real Pachad Yitzchak.
The
Yitzchak Lamprani.
Dictionary.
Yeah.
The dictionary.
The story, I'll give it very short, that there was, Khomeini had the hostages. He accepted a rabbi and a Muslim and a clergyman should come for the hostages to help give them chaplaincy.
Yeah.
And he had a big cane. There were only one or two hostages, and they were singing. It was Hanukkah, and the Rebbe said, "Take, you know, it was camp, whatever." And they were singing Masur, and everyone was wondering, came over to join because they said they knew these guys were happy. And Khomeini had a big, an outdoor conference of thousands of people. And when they said Allah Akbar, they all bowed. So the Galach also bowed, but the Rabbi refused to bow. So Khomeini sent his son over to the rabbi and he said, why didn't you bow? He says, number one is we only bow to our God. I don't know. And number two is you speak in a foreign language. I don't know what you're saying. So Khomeini said, I want to meet with him because I respect his
answer.
Yeah, and his philosophy. And they were talking for 3-4 hours. And during the conversation, the rabbi said that the Magen David is not an Israeli symbol. It's a 2,000-year-old symbol.
Ruzil Hamalch. Ruzil Hamalch. What?
And Khomeini said, I didn't know that. He called in one of the assistants. He says, I want you to pass the ordinance to all the police, whatever. A Jew walking with a Magen David should not be harmed.
Wow.
And he told him, you know, we also have slichas to get up. Whatever happened further, slichas. There was a curfew. You had to get up early in the morning and do it the 30 days, whatever. He also passed the order saying, anyone carrying a Magen David is exempt from the curfew in the morning.
Wow. The Magen David appears, it's not so clear. The Ruzil Hamalach talks about this symbol, which we think is the Magen David, and it's an ancient symbol. It was used to mark graves. That was the first usage of this symbol. We once gave a whole show on this, the Magen David. It's a fascinating topic. The Magen David, today, it became, obviously, became the symbol of the state of Israel. And, you know, I don't have to tell you anything more. And by the way, there are three shields. There's the Magen David, the Magen Avraham, Baruch Atah Hashem, Magen Avraham, and there is the Magen of Shlomo. Shlomo. The Magen of Shlomo has how many points? Six. Six. I'm sorry. Five. Shlomo has five. The Magen of Shlomo has five. The Magen of Avraham has eight. And in fact, they dug up an area to an archaeological discovery in ancient Shul. They have the Magen Avraham, a mosaic on the floor. It has 8 points. And this is a Kabbalistic stuff. And these three shields together, what do they spell? Chava. Chav Ches Vav He. Ches is the Magen Avraham. Vav is the Magen David. And Hey is the Magen Shlomo. So these three, this is Chava. Goes back to the first woman. The first woman, there are three shields, and these three shields are there's a lot of interesting Kabbalistic stuff. once upon a time we learned about this, maybe we'll do it another time again. But end of it over here, we have a Rev Yatra Hashem Magin Ba'adi Hashem Yot Utsoleh, King of Holy Days, Magin Ba'adi Shrizim Bespatlis, Magin Ba'adi Kivoidi Umeirim Roishi. Let's see the Rashi over here in this Pasik. Now, again, this is the second, that I'll give you a little foreshadowing. There, again, it says where it's Selah three times. And in essence, what this refers to is there are three different types of enemies a person could have. David had three different groups of enemies. And all the Mefarshim here, they go to town on this. They all go and they all tell you about the three. Everyone has their take on a different type of enemy that a person could have. And specifically in David's case, who were his enemies? His enemies were broken up into three groups. Basically, we will see this is one group wanted him dead. Another group just wanted him removed from office. And the other group, they wanted it, they wasn't to such a degree. They wanted him to retire, but should be part of the cabinet, you know, held in high esteem. There are different degrees of intensity of hatred. Some people hate someone so much they want them to leave this world. Other people, you can be in this world, but just be an ordinary. You can be an ordinary citizen. You cannot be in the limelight. And other people, no, you can be in the limelight. They don't hate you that much. You just can't be the president. You can be part of the cabinet. But you can't be. There are different in degrees of intensity. So over here, that's case. So over here, we're entering now into a lower level. In the first level, we said, Rabim oimim lenafshi, concerning my neshama, ein yishu asa lo elokim sel. That's the worst. They want to take my neshama and obliterate it. That's the most intense. This madrega, the enemies over here, it doesn't say anything about the neshama. It doesn't say, it just says over here in this section, the Atu Hashem Mogin Ba'adi, you're my shield. Kivoidi, you are my honor. Umeirim Roshi, you lift me up. Koli Hashem Ekra, I cry out to you, Hashem, with my voice. To you, Hashem, I cry out. Vaya'aneini, you answer me. Mehar Kodsho, you answer me from your holy mountain. Sela, forever. Here, there is no mention here that the enemy wants to kill him. It just says the enemy.
Kvoidi in another context mean the neshama?
What? The kvoidi?
Like ura kvoidi?
Yes. It says that for, I think, the Rashi says this, Rashi, yes. But it doesn't say with the intensity of the first section. Ein oimrim lenafshi, ein yeshu osa loy velukim. It doesn't say that. We do Rashi in this section over here. There are no Rashis over here. Suppose we move over time, we'll stop in the section. You are my shield. You are Hashem on my shield. Kivoidi, you are my honor. Let's see the mitzvah that I trust the word kivoidi. Kivoidi, no, there is really isn't very much over here in the mitzvah is David. I saw one of the first, explained a little bit more kivoidi. I'll leave it for now. We're out of time now. Kivoidi, you are my honor. Kivoidi, you Hashem are the source of my dignity. Let's say my dignity. You are my shield, you are my dignity. Umeirim Roishi, you lift up my head. Someone that is depressed has to put his head down in shame. You give me honor, you raise my Roish. Koili, with my voice, El Hashem Ekra, to you Hashem do I call out, and Vaya'aneini, you answer me, Mehar Kodsho, from your holy mountain, Selah. David, at this point in time in the life of David, when David was running from Avshalom, it was not yet known where the Beis HaMikdash would be built. This only took place at the end of David's life. L'shichnoi sidrishu uvas hashana. It's hard to imagine that for 440 years, when they were in Eretz Yisrael, or a little bit less, they really didn't know where to build the Beis HaMikdash. The Mikdash was on the move. It was in Gilgal for 14 years. Then it was in Shiloh for 369 years. Then it was in Noiv and Givon for a combined 57 years. And then it was then it went to Ir David. It was taken to Ir David, which was in the vicinity of the Beis HaMikdash. But it wasn't yet known where the permanent, the final destination. You have reached your final destination. Waze was clueless as to where would be the final destination of the Makom Hashua Sashchina. This was for 480 years until David, together with Nasan Hanavi, Alpi Ruach HaKodesh, they were able to figure out that Yerushalayim, the Makom that it is today, the field of Aravna HaYerusi, this would be the permanent location for Hashem's resting place to fulfill what it says in the Pasuk, L'shichnoi Sidrishu. You shall seek out Hashem's Shechina. You have to seek out Vosa Shama. It took 480 years to fulfill this Pasuk. So the question is, when it says here, Har Kodshai, what are we referring to? David at this point in time did not know where the Holy Mountain is. He did not know where Salifah. How could David say these words, Mehar Kodshai, when it was not yet decided? At this point, when David said these words, where was the Mikdash? It was in Noiv Gibbon, I think. I think at this point in time, it was during these 57 years, it was in Noiv Gibbon. It wasn't in Yerushalayim. So what is in Mehar Kodshai? So the Mepharshim, they struggle. They struggle with this. And the answer basically is they did know already from the very beginning, to a degree, that the final resting place would be somewhere in the vicinity of this mountain, the mountain of Yerushalayim, that mountain, the Har, what's called Har Tzion, that region, the region of Yerushalayim. I'm not at all familiar with the topography and the geography of this whole area, but that region is called Har Tzion. And within Har Tzion, there is Yerushalayim, and there is the Har Habayis, the field of Ravna HaYavusi, that they didn't know. They didn't know the precision, but they already had a tradition dating back from the time they crossed the Yarden that Har Tzion would be the Mokoyim of the final resting place. And that's what it means over here. And that's a chiddush. That's an insight. Because if you just would learn Tanakh on a very flat, simple level, you would not say that. You would say that they knew nothing. It could have been in Tel Aviv. It could have been in Beit Shemesh. It could have been in Be'er Sheva. Could have been down in Eilat. Who knows where it could have been? It could have been anywhere. It could be anywhere. Oh, the very end of David's life. Nasan Hanavi, David. They worked, they had Ruach HaKodesh, they discovered the field of Aravna HaYavusi. And until that moment in time, they knew nothing. No, Mepharshim here, right, we will Mepharshim here. No, from this pasuk we learned, they already knew, basically, from the day one, they knew Har Tzion.
Well, they're trying to figure out Bahar Hashem Yeroeh, and that's a lot of it was written on the beginning of Parshas Vayetzeh, because it says Bamochim three times at the beginning of the dream. Vayivka Bamochom, Vayon Shem Kibo Hashemesh, Vayivka Bamochom, you know, Vayishka Bamochom, it says the word Mochom unnecessarily two at a time, all three times. So it says that place was going to be three Bate Mikdashos, first, second, and the eventual third. I mean, that's. But we don't know, like in the Limudei Nisan, it makes a point of saying, but in that place he was crossing over, certainly wasn't Yerushalayim, so he gets into the thing. A ladder doesn't go straight up, it's on a slant. So if you draw a plumb line from the top of the ladder there, it falls into the spot, you know.
Okay, so this is...
Where the initial was?
Sorry?
Where Avram brought Yitzchak?
So did they know? That's part of the question. Maybe they forgot. Yeah. It wasn't known. It was a mystery. Oh. I mean, the whole thing, maybe there was no record.
Only Avraham and Yitzchak knew the place.
No, it was lost. It's all a big mystery. Okay, Sela, so this concludes the second portion of this Mizmar. And then the last portion, again, is a third portion, a different group of enemies, which also concludes with the word Sela, which we'll Nisham will do tomorrow. All right. Let's take a short break.